A battle is underway on Capitol Hill to overhaul the Medicare program. The Bush administration has pressed for a bill to add prescription drug coverage and make other reforms. One of the most controversial changes is a pilot program that would test direct competition between the government-run Medicare program and private health care plans. This is a big and complicated piece of legislation. It's expected to run over 1,000 pages. At the moment, no one outside of Congress has had a chance to see the whole thing. The final version of the bill is still being written. Even so, its sponsors hope for a vote before Congress breaks for Thanksgiving. If it's approved, it would be a major victory for the president. If you have questions about how the prescription drug plan would work or about the role of private health plans or anything else that's in the bill, our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us here in Studio 3A to help us figure out what's in this bill is Tricia Newman, Vice President of the Kaiser Family Foundation and head of their Medicare Policy Project. And it's good of you to come in today.
Thank you for having me.
And I guess the first thing that we should say is that whatever version of the bill gets passed, if it does get passed, none of it would take effect until 2006.
Well, actually, there's a small part of it that does kick in immediately in 2004, just a few months from now. Seniors and younger beneficiaries with disabilities would be able to get a discount card for a small fee, and they would have that available in 2004 and 2005. So there's an interim measure that does start immediately.
Having said that, I guess the highlight is the prescription drug benefit, if you wanted to pick out one thing. What does the proposed coverage for that look like?
Well, the benefit is a little bit complicated to describe. It starts with a deductible, and I understand the numbers have shifted a bit. There's a $250 deductible. That's the amount an individual pays themselves before they start to get help from the plan. And then there's a 25% coinsurance until the person has about $2,200 in total spending. Now, that means about almost $500 that they would pay as part of their benefit. And then once they reach this benefit limit, which is now a little over $2,000, there's what has been called a hole in the donut or a benefit gap. And there's another $2,800 in spending that an individual will have to pay themselves, after which point they would get catastrophic help. Mm-hmm. And then the catastrophic Medicare benefit would pay for 95% of their expenses. But the odd thing about this benefit structure is this sort of gap in the middle that people have been talking about.
Now, obviously, this will affect different kinds of individuals very differently, depending on what they're using, all kinds of things. But on average, and as you say, the numbers are still changing, but on average for most people, would they be covered by that after they pay the deductible? Would they be covered by before they got to that gap part?
Well, it's so hard to generalize because everybody's circumstance is different. And some people will be helped by the low income feature. Some people will have full coverage if their incomes are low. Some people will stay in their employer plan and then they won't really be affected by this particular benefit design. So it's very hard to generalize. And I think that's an important thing to remember. Each individual is going to have a different experience depending upon the drugs they take and how expensive those drugs are.
Again, our phone number is 800-989-8255. And Caroline's on the line with us from Charleston, South Carolina.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was wondering if Congress put anything in this bill to negotiate a price on these drugs, or if the American taxpayer is just going to be paying the same high prices that we quite frankly shouldn't be, and if there was any attempt on cost control in terms of these prescriptions.
That's a great question. The proposal that's being talked about puts Congress at arm's distance from direct price controls. That's been a fairly controversial issue. And Congress instead has decided to contract with private plans, either health insurers or other types of private plans, and they would be the intermediaries. They would be the ones to negotiate. So it's not the full government that's negotiating directly with the pharmaceutical companies. It would be the individuals, insurers, and health plans.
And they've dropped the Canadian part of the proposal, correct?
Yes, there was a provision that had to do with reimportation from Canada, and many members of Congress wanted to make it easier for seniors and people in the general public to bring in lower-cost drugs. And my understanding is that's not part of the final compromise.
So it wouldn't be addressed at all?
It would not be. The current law would continue.
Okay. Caroline, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Okay. The other big controversial item is a move towards privatization. It involves, that seniors would be able to sign up for a Medicare standalone drug plan or join a private health plan. And how would that work?
Well, either way, private plans are really the operating system for getting your drug benefit. If you want to stay in traditional fee-for-service Medicare, you can sign up to get your drug coverage through a private plan. Or your other option would be to sign up for an HMO or PPO where you would get your regular Medicare benefits and your drug benefits. But either way, the senior has to have some relationship, has to sign up for a private plan to get their drug coverage.
And this would be voluntary?
This would be voluntary, but it's important to remember that once you're initially eligible for signing up, you may want to think about doing that because there could be penalties for delayed enrollment. And that's an important thing for consumers to think about as they're making their decisions.
Okay, and now let's move on to the so-called demonstration project. This would be set up in six areas around the country in the year 2010. We're going to hear two views on this idea in just a moment, but it's another move towards privatization. But first, explain to us what this demonstration project is, Tricia Newman.
This has been a really controversial issue. The House plan had what they called premium support, which is true competition that would have started in 2010, and it would have pitted traditional Medicare against private health plans, and they would compete, which would essentially change Medicare as it is known today, because the flow of dollars would have differed and people in traditional Medicare would have had a different experience. That turned out to be fairly controversial, and there are many members who expressed their concern that premiums for those in traditional Medicare would rise and there would be equity issues. So Congress stepped back in this compromise and said, okay, well, let's have a demonstration project. So the notion is being tested in a more limited scale in six metropolitan areas for 6 years beginning in 2010. Still, there's a lot of consternation about whether or not this should go through, and there's disagreement about how far-reaching this is.
Okay, let's get another caller. This is Sydney, who's with us from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Okay, my question is, Senator Ted Kennedy very recently, brought to light the provision in the Medicare where the insurance companies and employers will be allowed to drop out senior citizens from their coverage, whether they are retirees or they are current working employees, and would take away those health benefits and would leave the senior citizen with only the Medicare coverage. And I say that, I've been paying premiums since I first started working many years ago, and the insurance companies have been making a bundle off of me, and now they want to dump me onto just the Medicare so that I don't have the secondary coverage with my private insurance company as a retiree. And I wanted to know how successful he has been in bringing this to light and getting this taken out of the bill.
This has been a big worry. Today, one in three people on Medicare rely on employers for their drug coverage, and many are worried already that employers are starting to cut back on their retiree health obligations. There have been a number of studies. Our own surveys have shown that the share of employers offering retiree health benefits has declined significantly. So the conference agreement that they're talking about would provide subsidies to employers to encourage them to continue to provide retiree health benefits even after the Medicare benefit is implemented. You know, how employers will respond to this package really remains to be seen.
Currently I have retiree benefits from a state employment. Mm-hmm. And I have the drug as well as the traditional medical coverage. And do you know if the bill does not change, if that would wipe all of that out?
You know, I don't know for sure. The specifics of the bill are just now being made available. So it's certainly something you'll want to look into, and you should contact maybe the state government to make sure that your benefits will continue to be available.
Okay. One other question. Has anyone done any cost analysis on this as to whether it is going to cost from the government side more and long term to Medicare by winnowing this down to where the person only has Medicare?
Come again? Do you understand that? I was a little confused by that, Sydney.
Oh, okay. Well, looking at it from the Medicare side and the government's budget side, mm-hmm. by taking away these extra benefits from the individual insured and having them insured only under Medicare, will this maybe topple some people over into other government benefits and actually cost the government more?
The Congressional Budget Office, and they're the scorekeepers on Medicare, they're taking a careful look at this issue because they do need to calculate how many people they think would be covered by Medicare and what the cost of that would be. And many people are standing by waiting to see what the Congressional Budget Office is going to say.
Okay, well, as long as we have plenty of sunshine on it, perhaps they'll make the right decision. Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call, Sydney. Joining us now with one view on the privatization issue is Gail Shearer. She's Director of Health Policy Analysis at Consumers Union, the publisher of Consumer Reports, and it's good of you to join us today.
Thank you for having me.
I understand you don't support this demonstration project.
We don't support the demonstration project. We have so many concerns. We think it's basically unfair to have private companies compete head-to-head against traditional fee-for-service Medicare, which allows people freedom of choice of doctor. We believe that the private companies will cherry-pick the healthy, and the long-term result is going to be much higher premiums for people who want that freedom to choose their doctor.
Proponents argue that it would give seniors more flexibility, more options, since they'll have a variety of private plans to choose from, and many people seem to like that.
Well, you know, the polls actually show that it's not choice of health insurance companies that seniors are looking for. They're looking for choice of doctor. And unfortunately, when you're in an HMO, when you're in a preferred provider organization, your choice of doctor is severely limited. And the sad thing is, for many, many seniors, they're going to have no choice financially but to be in an HMO or a PPO.
So that you feel that this is actually driving people, that they'll be, in effect, forced to move.
In effect, forced because they cannot afford to pay the high Part B premium that will result from this unfair competition.
So that this is, and again, just to clarify, you think that this will move the healthier people out of Medicare and, in effect, make that program much more expensive?
That's exactly what we fear is going to happen, yes.
Okay, Gail Shearer, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Gail Shearer is Director of Health Policy Analysis at the Consumers Union, the publisher of Consumer Reports. She was with us from her office here in Washington. And joining us now from Capitol Hill is Congresswoman Jennifer Dunn, a Republican from the state of Washington. She's a member of the Ways and Means Subcommittee on Health. And Congresswoman, good to have you back on
Hello,
Talk
Neil.
Of the
Nation. Neil. Nice to be back with you.
Now, you were a very important part in putting the provisions together on the Medicare bill. Privatization, obviously, a big part of that. What do you hope this demonstration project would accomplish?
Well, we don't necessarily call it privatization because we believe that Medicare serves a very important function, and we wouldn't have wasted all these years putting it together. We wanted to come out with a great answer that combined prescription drug service, especially to low-income seniors, but available to all seniors, and then also build in some competition in the sense that we're looking at private sector principles to bring into the operation of Medicare, because that's where we've seen the savings of funding that go along with good service to customers. So I think this is going to be an interesting first start to competition. Doesn't start, as you well know, Neil, until 2010, and then we will be testing only in six metropolitan areas. But I think it will give us a sense and a choice to seniors who have not had that choice before, but also a sense of if this is going to work well, buck up the program, get the government to cut its costs in ways that the private sector has proven it can.
We're speaking with Congresswoman Jennifer Dunn about the Medicare bill, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Congresswoman, first of all, why would the great majority of the measures in this overall bill be delayed until 2006 and this project till 2010? Why the delay? And again, also on the project, why just six demonstration projects?
The whole Medicare program is a very intricate program, and it requires a great deal of educating. It requires a whole lot of processing of programs and creating forms and that sort of thing. The education is a very important part of why we have this delay for 2 years until 2006. There is going to be a lot that goes on between now and that time, though, because we're looking for immediate extra savings for seniors on drug costs. And so that's why the discount card begins immediately in May. They say they're able to get that on the streets and allow seniors to save a huge amount of money. All seniors who partake in the program will save between 15 and 25% on drugs they're paying for right now. And low-income seniors will have an automatic $600 that they'll be able to deduct from the front end of their prescription costs. We're building in the competitive principles. We're using private sector principles from the very beginning, but the competitive program, that is the experimental program, will begin in 2010 because we want to observe how Medicare works over the next few years. We want to make sure that we're choosing areas of the nation that have at least two local private plans that have at least 25% of local private plan penetration, so they are proven plans. And we also want to provide for the educating of seniors that will help them decide that this is the way they want to go. It also happens that 2010 is an important year in that you're going to have baby boomers retiring at great rates then, and we believe that they will have been educated by then to be able to choose for whatever their needs are.
Let's get a caller involved. Janelle joins us on the line from Portland, Oregon.
Hi there.
Hi.
My question has to do with where is the deliberative process in all of this? It seems to me that there's a huge pattern. If you look at the energy bill, if you look at this bill, any number of things where the legislation is developed behind closed doors in an incredibly exclusive way. My understanding is that Democrats were not even allowed in the room when the energy bill was made. And then it's released in such a way that it's a huge document that there's no time for even staffs and legislators to review it, let alone the American people. Where is the democratic process? These are two incredibly important elements of our economic and social viability, energy and health care, and we're trying to ram it through so people can get a vacation?
Well, let me just tell you what my experience is. I am on the Healthcare Subcommittee of Ways and Means, and we wrote this bill in the beginning. And we started writing this bill 5 years ago. We had a bill that was quite similar to this one that we had developed over 2 years. It was discussed on the committee. We never passed it out of the House. The Senate never passed a similar bill. And then almost 3 years ago, my committee began having meetings once a week, 2 hours every single meeting, to put together this legislation, met with the administration to get their ideas, and met with the Senate to get their ideas. And we put these ideas together. We did pass that bill in the House, but it never got through the Senate.
I don't mean to rush you, but we're running out of time now.
Yeah.
So
this year, we've had so much observation and so much involvement in this. It's been looked at. And this is the compromise bill that nobody will be 100% happy with, but they all have been involved in.
Congresswoman, thank you very much. Jennifer Dunn, Republican from Washington. Today, we are discussing the Medicare bill. Our guest is Tricia Newman, who's Vice President of the Henry J. Kaiser Family Foundation, Director of their Medicare Policy Project. She's with us here in Studio 3A. If you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And as we mentioned, Tricia, the final version of this bill is, I gather, just appearing on the Internet now?
Yes, just as I left to come here, we noticed that it was up on the Ways and Means Committee website, so I think everybody's very busy looking at the fine print and trying to understand what all is in the bill.
And what is the prospects now for when a vote would be scheduled?
You know, the conferees, I understand, are meeting as we speak, probably trying to come to some decision about that. There was some talk that it could be as soon as tomorrow, but maybe it's later. It could be later this weekend.
But definitely before the Congress plans to break before, well, you can't say definitely about anything in
yes.
Congress, but before they hope to get it voted on before the Thanksgiving break.
That's what the leadership had said they wanted to do.
The major political change in this legislation was the endorsement of the AARP, what used to be known as the Association of Retired Persons. They changed their name because there are a lot of members in that organization that aren't retired. Anyway, this was a major change. They've put out a commercial saying, "Look, it's not a perfect bill, but it's a good start, and we should approve it." This has been highly controversial.
Yes, it has been controversial. It's certainly a big deal that the AARP has endorsed the proposal and is putting its significant clout behind it. And I think one of the reasons it was controversial is it caught many members off guard who weren't necessarily expecting the AARP to come out in favor so soon. But they have, and now really it's a part of the process in terms of whether and how members will react both to the endorsement, but maybe more significantly to how seniors in their district react ultimately when they see the details of the bill and they start to sort through what the benefit means for them, will their drugs be covered, and how much savings this will provide them over time.
In a few minutes, we'll be joined by the director of policy at AARP, who will be talking about that. And if you want to call in and ask questions about that, again, the number is 800-989-8255, and the email address is totn@npr.org. But within the two big political parties, Republicans and Democrats, obviously it's caused a lot of friction between the two parties, but also within the parties as well. Tell us a little bit more about that.
There's so many complicated issues here that are involved in putting together a package as big as this. Within the Republican Party, there's been questions about how much cost containment is enough. Some members are concerned about adding $400 billion in new spending to the program. And so there's been an issue about, will there be features in the proposal that will slow the growth in Medicare spending or keep the spending intact? And that's been a big issue. Another one is this concept of how much of a role should private plans have? And that's been an area of disagreement within the party. And I guess another issue which goes across parties is this notion of reimportation from Canada. I mean, that's been an issue that members on both sides of the aisle have supported when there have been votes on the issue in the House and the Senate, and that doesn't appear to be part of the final package, so there's probably going to be some disagreement on that issue.
Okay. As we mentioned, the AARP has played a major role in all of this. Joining us now is John Rother, Director of Policy and Strategy at the AARP. He's on the line with us from his office here in Washington. Good of you to be with us today.
Nice to be here.
You've been running full-page ads in a lot of the newspapers across the country saying, quote, "The Medicare bill is not perfect, but millions of Americans can't afford to wait for perfect." Is this half a loaf being better than none?
Half a loaf is better than none in this case, because there's really no prospect that waiting will improve the result. And we have millions of members who are lower income or have very high drug expenses who really need relief quickly, and this bill can give it to them.
Which parts of the bill, though, are not so perfect?
Well, I think there could be stronger pressure on the drug companies to lower their prices, and that's something that we have fought for and will continue to fight for. And that's something that I think will inevitably be addressed in future legislation. We were disappointed that there wasn't more in this bill.
How close of a decision was it? Was it a knife edge?
No, it wasn't a knife edge after some late changes were made in the bill, but up until fairly recently, I think it would have been a much closer call.
If there was one thing that tipped it one way or the other, what was that?
Well, there were three things, actually. Better benefits for lower-income seniors, better assurances and more support for employers so that they would retain their current retiree health benefits, and finally, a change in the so-called premium support provisions that would make that a limited demonstration, not a permanent feature of the program.
Your members do not get to vote on your legislative positions, obviously, though you do poll them, and you don't want to alienate your members or future members. And you've been hearing a lot of criticism, including here's an email that we got from Dan Resnick in San Diego. The AARP's endorsement of the Medicare prescription drug legislation has moved me and many others to cancel membership in that organization. Their endorsement is less valid today than it was yesterday. How are you answering critics like that?
Well, we're a big organization. Obviously, we have 35.5 million members, and so it's not possible for everyone to agree on everything. And we certainly hope that once people look more carefully at the final legislation, they'll see why we made the decision to support it. We did a poll of our own members last night, and 75% of AARP members say they want this bill enacted. So we feel like there's a strong member support. That doesn't mean, though, that people who are very sincere don't have reasons to oppose, and we certainly respect that.
Your traditional allies on the Hill have been mostly Democrats. Yesterday, two of those leaders, Senate Minority Leader Tom Daschle and House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, said they thought that the head of the AARP, William Novelli, would come to regret the decision to support this bill. What do you think they meant?
It's hard for me to interpret that. I don't see how you can regret helping people who need help. I think the politics of this may be as much as an explanation as anything.
Well, what do you mean by that?
Well, last year we supported a bill authored by Senator Bob Graham, a Democrat of Florida, and worked very hard on that bill's behalf, and it was not successful in the Senate. But nonetheless, we got incredible praise from our Democratic friends and, mm-hmm. of course, a heaping of scorn from Republicans. So now the tables are turned. I think it just shows that we are, in fact, a nonpartisan organization, and we'll be working closely with Democrats on many other issues in the future, such as, for example, Social Security reform.
Thanks very much for being with us today.
Welcome.
John Rother is Director of Policy and Strategy at AARP. He spoke to us on the phone from his office here in Washington. And still with us here in Studio 3A is Tricia Newman from the Kaiser Family Foundation. And your organization does surveys of seniors on a range of issues. What do they say about what they want from Medicare?
Well, we haven't done any surveys of this proposed package, and I think that's important to remember. When we did do surveys over the course of the summer and focus groups, what we found was a real expectations gap. Seniors were both confused and in some ways disappointed when they heard about what the benefit package was going to look like, and we felt that the responses indicated that they were looking for more, that they were looking for a benefit that would match the benefit that workers typically get today. So the donut hole didn't really make a whole lot of sense and was confusing. And
that's the gap in prescription drug coverage.
Right. Yeah. You know, in one of our focus groups, an older woman said, "Wait, I don't understand. I'm going to be paying my premium, but I'm not going to be getting a benefit when I go to the pharmacy." So I agree with the Congresswoman that an education effort is going to be hugely important as this program, or if this program, moves forward.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation, which is coming to you from NPR News. And here's another email question, this one from Kathleen Rand. From what I hear, she writes, Medicare will be bankrupt by 2025. By the time I retire, there will be nothing left. Why should I support a prescription drug benefit when it won't be there anyway?
Well, I think a lot of people are worried about the future financing of Medicare as the baby boom generation ages, and hope that there's a discussion among policymakers and others to figure out what are the various strategies for keeping Medicare financially solvent. The bigger issue here is who's going to pay for prescription drugs if it's not going to be Medicare? And it looks like policymakers have recognized that there's real costs involved here, and if Medicare is not going to pay for it, then it falls on the backs of seniors. And we have to remember that many seniors have modest incomes, so their calculation, at least, is to add to the Medicare benefit. But that does sort of beg the broader question, and there probably does need to be a discussion about how to finance or how to keep Medicare solvent for future generations of seniors. Some organizations have looked at it, including the National Academy of Social Insurance, and have said even in order to keep current benefits, not thinking about the Medicare drug benefit, mm-hmm. more money will need to be put into the system because Medicare is a fairly lean system. It's got very low administrative costs. And in order to pay benefits for a population that will double in size, more money needs to come in. And that may be something that has to be considered.
And it will double in size because of the retirement of the baby boom
exactly.
generation, which is rapidly approaching.
Exactly.
Let's go to a caller. Walter's on the line with us from Kansas City.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I don't know if I haven't been listening or maybe people haven't been talking about it. I read the other day in a column Molly Ivins reported about Boston University School of Public Health, titled "New Medicare Rx Benefits Means Big Profits for Drug Companies." An estimated 61% of the Medicare dollars that will be spent to buy more prescriptions will remain in the hands of drug makers as profits. I know statistics don't mean anything without context, so I haven't heard much about it, and I don't know much what that means. Also, the estimated increased profits under this bill are $139 billion over 8 years. It sounds to me like we're laying over to the lobbyists and the drug companies again. Do you have any comment on that?
Tricia Newman? Oh, there's a comment. Clearly somebody in your household is outraged.
I just want to say that wasn't me.
Okay. I'm sorry, Walter, if you could calm the dog down, if you would. Go ahead. Tricia Newman.
You know, again, I think it's important when the Congressional Budget Office comes out with their numbers to look at how the dollars are being spent. This is a big package. There's $400 billion that's on the table, and most of it will go to the drug benefit, but others of it will go to pay for private plans who are part of Medicare, Medicare Plus Choice plans, and other kinds of providers. So the issue of how the dollars are being spent and which stakeholders are getting more or less is something that you can only tell when you see the numbers, which I know many people are eager to take a look at.
Okay, Walter, thanks very much.
Thank you.
And maybe a can of Alpo.
Sorry about that.
Okay. Here's an email question from Peggy Ringel in Portland, Oregon. I work in an oncology clinic in Portland, and at the request of my managers have been calling senators and representatives, pleading for them to not vote yes on this, since money will be pulled from cancer care. Don't people realize that money has to be taken from one place in order to give it elsewhere? How is it good to be cutting cancer care? Does this cut cancer care?
This is an issue of cancer drugs versus cancer care, and there have been concerns over time that Medicare has paid too much for cancer drugs. And there a provision in the compromise would lower the growth in payments for cancer drugs, but the issue from the oncologist's point of view is that they have been underpaid, and the overpayment of cancer drugs has enabled them to sort of stay whole. It's unclear how this will be addressed in the final package. I know that even in the very end, there were some final negotiations going on about this.
Okay. Thanks very much for being with us today. Obviously, this is a huge piece of legislation, and the final version just finished this afternoon. They're expecting a vote. But if people wanted to find out how to read the bill or find out more, where could they go?
Well, they can. To find out about the benefits in their bill, they could go to the Kaiser Family Foundation website, which is KFF.org. To find out about the bill itself, they could go to the Ways and Means website, which is at houseways and means.gov.
Tricia Newman is Director of Medicare Policy Project at the Kaiser Family Foundation. She joined us here in Studio 3A. And again, thanks very much for being with us. A couple of the news stories NPR is working on this afternoon. Tens of thousands of demonstrators marched through the heart of London today, toppling a 17-foot-tall papier-mâché statue of President Bush to show their anger over the Iraq War. The president is ending near the end of his state visit to Britain. And pop star Michael Jackson left Nevada this morning en route to California. He's just gotten off the plane there. He faces an arrest warrant alleging multiple counts of child molestation. You can hear details on both those stories coming up later today on All Things Considered. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.